The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Let's talk some draft. Field Yates from ESPN, kind enough to join us right now during this busy time on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line here on the Fan 680 and 93.7 FM. Field, thanks for coming on. How you doing?
Doing great, guys. Looking forward to tomorrow. And anticipation is about to end as we're about to get into the real thing.
Your tweet earlier today really depressed me as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers make history. Talk about that a little bit. Everybody is coming back.
Yeah, it really is a remarkable job this offseason, and the Bucs keeping their core intact. As I noted, their top 16 offensive contributors in terms of snaps played last year, their top 21 defensive contributors. Basically, the entire coaching staff, except for a couple of position coaches, are going to be back as well. And, you know, the Bucs certainly hit their stride in the second half of last season. So there's been a bit of pushback from people that have said, well, the Chiefs tried to do that last year, and how did it work out for them? And my retort would be they went 14-1 during the regular season, as I'm not counting that last week game against the Chargers in Week 17 when the Chiefs rested all their starters and they went back to the Super Bowl. So I would say that when you have an excellent team, bringing it back together is usually good business, especially when you've got a quarterback who's 43 years old.
So we had talked earlier today, and it was the first thought that I had when I saw Antonio Brown's coming back. They must believe he's going to keep his nose clean, or else they wouldn't have done it, or there's something in the deal where they can just walk away if that doesn't happen this offseason. But you root for, because we sit in this division with them, you root for a little bit of a fat cat syndrome. I know the retort is, well, Tom Brady won't let that happen, but I don't know if Tom Brady really controls the lives of 35 grown-ass men that much. Is there any chance they fat cat their way through any part of this season?
Well, I think it's possible. A couple of things is, first of all, they are now going to be the hunted even more. Now, that being said, I think that, you know, when you have Tom Brady, you automatically have a huge bullseye on your back just because he's the greatest quarterback of all time and has accomplished so much. So it's not like they didn't get the best from their opponents last year. On the other hand, there hasn't been a repeat champion since the Patriots back in 2003 and 2004. So we're in a 17-year drought of back-to-back Super Bowl winners, which underscores just how difficult it is. And then there's the part that is unique to the NFL that makes it so great. And I know it's kind of a lame phrase from time to time, but any given Sunday is applicable, right? I don't think that if the Chiefs and the Bucks play 10 times, like the game ends up like the Super Bowl did, more than maybe one or two times. I really do believe that's about as poorly as the Chiefs would play in a big game scenario, but it doesn't matter if that's 1 in 10 occurrence or 1 out of 20 occurrence, because the game was settled one Sunday afternoon in February in Tampa Bay. So I think that the fact that the NFL has so little margin for error in the playoffs is part of the reason why, despite the fact that the Bucs look like favorites in the NFC on paper, that, you know, next season is going to be full of twists and turns, and you just never know what happens once January football begins.
Totally unfair, and I will put it actually into the dumb question category, but I'll ask it anyway. Through the draft, what's the best-case scenario for the Falcons to pick up wins, actual wins, new coaches, new everything around here, so it's not fair, but through the draft, what kind of difference can it make in the win-loss column, depending upon what they do for this upcoming week?
Are you saying, like, how many wins could they pick up, or are you saying...
Yes, yeah, how many wins do you think they're capable of picking up where guys that they take over the 4 days, you look and you go, 3 days, 4 days, and you look and you go... That's how they're good. This is how many wins, best case scenario, they can pick up because of who they draft.
Yeah, I think they could end up winning 11 games this upcoming season. I know that's all a ton, right? But, like, you just got to go back to last year, which, again, you're asking for best case scenario. So I'm going to give you the best case scenario, right? 11-6. Now, that's a lot of wins and certainly a massive improvement compared to where they were last year. But I don't need to tell you guys how many games last year they either should have won or could have won, right? I mean, you start the season, what was it, 0-5, 0-6 last year? But, like, the first, I mean, especially that game against Dallas with the watermelon kick against the Bears as well, like, those are games where you think they should be winning them or could be winning them. And that we know that the Falcons had some quirky, surprising wins last year. The Raiders were red hot, and they toasted them in that game. I mean, it was like a 30-point blowout, right, last year when those two teams played. So we've seen the Falcons hang tough. They did so against Kansas City late in the season. That's when Kansas City had a lot on the line. So I would say best-case scenario is something like a 6 or 7 win improvement because of all the games they lost narrowly last year, because there's going to be an infectious energy to the new coaching staff and new front office. It's going to bring some rejuvenation. I think the fact that they're going to land a premium player, they could land a premium player to help them right away at the 4th overall pick, which, you know, obviously Kyle Pitts is the name we've discussed the most. But, you know, on paper, the Falcons could be just an absolute force on offense. Defensively, they've got some major reparations to do, but maybe a different scheme and a different voice helps them feel like they can be maybe not dominant, but at least competent defensively that could help keep them in that playoff mix for, you know, the better portion of next regular season.
Field Yates exciting a lot of Falcons fans with that statement as he joins us from ESPN right now on the Lots Experience.
Yeah, I mean,
systems.
You guys asked for best case scenario, right? It's the NFL. Like every year a team goes from worst to first. I'm not counting on it. If you told me, like, is there a world that exists where the Falcons have a 5% chance to go 11-6 next year? I tell you, yeah.
Well, history has shown, as you said,
in
the NFL. Go back to
totally, yeah, but, you know, they may be more like 8-9 next year, for all we know, or 7-10. But it would not be the most shocking thing I've ever seen. The Falcons had a resurgence next season.
Yeah, it's still weird to hear 8-9 and 7-10. My brain still has to get wrapped around a 17-game season. Field Yates again with us from ESPN on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. So I think everybody stands in agreement now as we move closer and closer to the draft that San Francisco seems to be that wild card. Is it going to be Mac Jones? Is it going to be Trey Lance, one of five quarterbacks that Kyle Shanahan seems that could fit his system?
Yeah, you know, I don't have any intel that hasn't already been put out there, but I'm going with my gut and my instinct here, which remains Mac Jones at the 3rd overall pick. Mac obviously had an incredible year this past year for Alabama, completed nearly 78% of his passes, over 4,500 passing yards. I get it. He had great pieces around him. You know who else did? The guy who went first overall the year before, Joe Burrow. And I'm not comparing them in terms of style of players or, you know, exact carbon copies of each other, as different dispositions, different trajectory. I mean, all sort. You know, Joe Burrow was the guy who was buried in the depth chart and transferred to LSU. Mac Jones, the guy who was buried in the depth chart and just said, I'm going to try to ride it out and see what happens. And both players made the right decision in their respective choices. But Mac Jones is a lot really well inside the pocket. Obviously, he's not the athlete that the other players at the position are that we're talking about amongst those top five. But I also don't think that Mac Jones is one of those quarterbacks that the minute he's under pressure, he's going to basically have to wave the white flag. You know, I actually think that Matt Ryan, who we've talked about a lot in the same vein as Mac Jones because of the fact that Kyle Shanahan, as we know, had amazing success with Matt Ryan as his quarterback. But you guys know this. Matt is not Kyler Murray as an athlete, but he's also not a guy who's just – a statue in the pocket either, right? Matt, I would say his functional mobility is solid, not spectacular, but not also such a weakness that, you know, he sniffs pressure and next thing you know, it's a sack. So I think that's a reasonable comp athletically for Mac Jones. And I think that there have been stretches in Matt's career and maybe still are going forward where you'd say to yourself, I'd take Matt Ryan if that's who I have 3rd overall. If you guarantee me Matt Ryan's career, I think the Falcons would feel pretty good. Excuse me, the 49ers will feel pretty good about that.
How long does it take an NFL coach to get comfortable in understanding? We talk about players, the speed of the game. Some of these games get really short if you make a bad decision in the second quarter. Like as a head coach, is there any indication that Arthur Smith, A, has somebody on his staff that might help him, like a bench coach? You know, you hire a young manager, you go get a bench coach. I know he's got P's to handle the defense, but how long does it take for an NFL head coach to sort of get the speed of the game when it comes to decision-making? How quickly you have to do it? Fine line when you're talking about a lot of games that are one-score games, it becomes obvious if your guy's not very good at it.
Yeah, I would say that's fair. My instinct is going to be just fine in it. You know, obviously he's a guy who had a lot of opportunities to be a head coach somewhere. So there are certainly a lot of desirable traits you saw from him both during his time as Titans offensive coordinator and tight ends coach, but also during the interview process. So in terms of who he has specifically on the staff, you know, you mentioned that Dean Pease has lot of experience in the NFL as a defensive coordinator. You know, Steve Hoffman, who he brought aboard as a senior assistant, is a guy who has been around the league forever, has spent a lot of time coaching on special teams, but he also was a member of some of the Cowboys' best teams during the early 90s, and sort of offensive and defensive side of the ball. So he's a veteran mentor. He's a guy that can provide some value there. But I don't know specifically who would be assigned as sort of like the right-hand man in terms of in-game management. But, you know, I think some of that stuff is something that is hard to say exactly how long it takes for each head coach. I think it's probably really dependent upon the coach. But Arthur Smith strikes me and everybody that I've spoken to about him as the kind of player that's very comfortable in his own skin and the kind of guy that has enough confidence that you believe is going to make the right decisions, but not at the point where it becomes arrogant. It's part of the reasons why one of the reasons why he was so alluring to so many teams. Obviously, we know his whole backstory, and we've heard it a zillion times over how this is a guy that if he wanted to could be living on an island probably with his FedEx inheritance. Instead, he's working in the NFL, working 100-hour weeks, which, as we know, certainly it's gratifying, but it also comes with a lot of, you know, there's the emotional pendulum, right? You spend 100 hours in the week planning for a game, and then you get blown out on Sunday. It doesn't feel like the best use of your time. So I think Arthur Smith, kind of head coach, is going to acquit himself pretty well early.
Field Yates with us from ESPN on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. It seems like Justin Fields, when we talk about the top quarterbacks, is the odd man out. Now, if that's true, why do you think he's falling the way he has?
Yeah, I don't know that it is. And here's the thing is that, like, we got to be careful. I got to be careful, I should say. I don't want to make this anybody else's problem about, like, believing everything we hear prior to the draft, because some stuff proves to be true and some stuff proves to be very far from the truth. So I'm not ready to – like, I think it's a conversation I'll feel more comfortable having if Justin Fields goes 12th or something like that. I can't even – off the top of my head, it's I guess that's probably unlikely given that Philadelphia has the 12th pick. But if he falls from, like, the top 9 picks, then maybe I'll have a better answer on it. You know, I'll just say this, is that I wish that we spent more time focusing in on the strengths of these quarterbacks as opposed to the warts, whatever warts there may be, because it's starting to feel to me like we're focusing too much on the negatives of these 5 quarterbacks when the reality is we have 5 unbelievable prospects. Like, 5 quarterbacks that not a single NFL person could tell you or would tell you deserve to go anywhere but the first round. So while, you know, someone's going to have to be 5th of those 5, maybe it's Justin Fields, maybe not. I don't think that Justin Fields going 5th of those 5 quarterbacks is some sort of – I don't think it spells doom for him long term.
Are you almost better off as the guy? You don't make as much money. But, man, if you told me I was going to end up 15, 16, I'm not talking about specific teams, but I had a chance to go to a better team, I think some of these guys in the Jets are certainly the screaming example of, do you really want to go play for that franchise?
Yeah, it's an interesting thought. Yeah, no, totally. I think and then the Bills with Josh Allen are kind of the inverse, right? Because you recall Buffalo drafted Josh Allen after moving up twice in the 2018 NFL draft, 21-12, which was a trade with the Bengals involving Cordy Glenn, and then 12-7 in a trade with the Buccaneers that was a draft pick switch. So Josh Allen goes to a team that, I get it, you know, that the year before when the Bills made the playoffs, that was not a great team. But still, it's a team that had learned how to win a little bit, had some good veteran experience, obviously a good head coach that established some credibility, really good head coach, I should say, and Sean McDermott. So I totally get you on that. Like, if, and this is, and I'm not trying to suggest this is what I think happened, because I have no idea. I've gotten to the point now where I don't want to go on a radio interview and tell you, like, this is what's going to happen, because it's the draft. None of us know what's going to happen. But if Justin Fields ever became a Patriot, I think that would set up for him. I'd say pretty well, right? I understand that team it does not have a perfect group of pass catchers, but much improved this offseason. Excellent defense, best head coach of all time. That might be a good example of a situation where, yeah, Justin Fields might have a little bit of, you know, he might be ticked off because he goes 5th of the 5 quarterbacks. Maybe he goes 15th overall, but maybe he's set up better for success than anybody else.
Yeah, it's a system in place. So I asked Nick, my partner here, better chance that Jimmy Garoppolo is playing for the 49ers or Julio Jones is playing for the Atlanta Falcons when the season starts?
I'm going to go with Jimmy Garoppolo playing for the 49ers. You know, and there had, you know, with Julio, I listen, if they trade him, it's going to be a massive, massive deal because he's Julio Jones. 10 years ago today, the team acquired him with a sixth overall pick in the draft in 2011. I'm sorry for forgetting the specific slot, but we know it came after the trade up that cost a lot of capital, but ended up being worth it. And I mean, the guy, and it's like, I know it's well known, but I went back and I was checking it and it sort of blew my mind. He averages nearly 10 yards more per game than any player in NFL history. It's like 20 yards more than Jerry Rice per game, the greatest wide receiver ever. So Julio's special. He's iconic. He's dominant. But if you look at the salary cap situation, I've really appreciated how transparent Terry Fontenot has been. He's not afraid to admit it. Like, they're in a tough spot right now with the cap, and they don't have a lot of vehicles that they can drive right now to alleviate these cap constraints in a hurry. And while having the fourth pick is tremendous because you're getting a great player, expensive too. And the Falcons, as of right now, are less than $1 million below the cap. So you just do the math. If the salary cap number for the fourth overall pick might be an eight-figure total, well, you got to find some room in a hurry. And a Julio Jones trade, while an incredibly difficult pill to swallow, you could get some serious draft capital. You'd get some 2021 cap relief, which it's not like the bill evaporates right away. You'd still have to pay it off in 2022, but this is going to take some time now. It's going to take some time. And I'm not suggesting they have to trade Julio Jones, but I am saying I get it if they decide to go that direction.
Finishing up with Field Yates from ESPN on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line here on the Fan 680 and 93.7 FM. So it seems like everybody's assuming, as of right now, it's going to be Kyle Pitts to the Falcons at 4. Do you agree?
I'll say three things. One, I'm gonna follow the wave here and say yes. Two, I wouldn't be stunned by Trey Lance. And then the last thing that I'll say, and I've been saying this since before the Julio Jones news bubbled up, if you told me the Falcons took Ja'Marr Chase, I wouldn't say you're totally crazy. Like, the guy's a special, special wide receiver. And I know that feels like a misallocation of resources because for now you have Julio Jones. You have Calvin Ridley, who's a bona fide mega super duper star. And so I'm not advocating this is the pick I would make. I'm just saying that one thing I try to do during the pre-draft process is cover all bases. And I'm not sure if it's a 0% chance, a 1% chance, maybe a 45% chance. But, stranger things have happened than a team taking a player who might be the best wide receiver prospect to come out since Julio Jones. So, again, I think it'll be Kyle Pitts. My second bet would be a quarterback. But, I guess you can't. You can't rule anything out.
So let me ask, depending upon what happens in the first three, what's the value of the fourth overall pick? What's the package that's, let's say Trey Lance is there and somebody says, well, there's our future quarterback. Somebody thinks it's Justin Fields. Somebody thinks it's Kyle Pitts. Whoever the hell it is, I really don't care at that point.
What could the Falcons
just
get
pay
in return
for
that pick?
Yeah, it depends on how, and I don't want to, sort of toe the line here or sit on the fence, but like, it depends on if it's Denver coming up from 9 versus Chicago coming up from 20, right? If it's Chicago coming up from 20, it might be 20 plus next year's one and the following year's one.
Right.
Additional draft picks, right? If it's Denver coming up from 9, it might be, hey, it's 9 plus a first round pick next year or something like that.
And
right?
Then Washington, let's say it's a Washington that wants to get in there, 19. I agree that the number changes. But in your world, do you believe there's enough value in, especially with a first year team or first year coach, they have equity? Yeah. Is that the type of deal 100%. that makes the most sense?
I think I would be absolutely making phone calls, or I should say taking phone calls if I'm Terry Fontenot, because, cost control assets are going to be immense when you're navigating a cap situation, right? What I'm not saying you can't have free agents, but in free agency, you have much less control over how much each player is making, right? Whereas when you have multiple, you know if you're drafting the player 9th overall, exactly how much that player is going to cost against the cap for the first 4 years. I mean, for the first 3 years, there's literally nothing you can do about the contract as you can't negotiate an extension until after 3 seasons. So I think more draft picks, more cost-controlled assets is essential when you are trying to navigate what is a daunting cap situation right now. It's not that the team doesn't have good players, but there's not a lot of flexibility.
Field, great stuff as always. We'll talk after the draft. We appreciate the time.
All right, guys. Sounds good. Talk to you soon.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.